Hi, I'm Henry Ranga. With me is Steve Ellingen. We continue our discussion on influencing wrecking habits. You know, I want to lead off the discussion on the word reproducible. You know, we talk about a person who doesn't walk with God is not as influential as a person who does walk with God. And one of the things we talk about in the Getting Started class of Southern Connections is a reproducible walk with God. So what about a walk with God and reproducible have anything to do with influence?
Well, I guess in some ways, reproducing is influence.
Ah.
Right? I mean, if I have an influence over someone, I'm reproducing something in me, whether it's my belief or my walk or some skill or a sport that I'm trying to teach. I have this thing, and I'm reproducing it in you.
Right.
So when we talk about a walk with God, a lot of times we, that can be a broad, general thing, but we like to narrow it down into the habits that make it happen.
Right.
So
right.
Talking, listening repeatedly to God, prayer, Bible reading.
Right.
And, you know, knowing God and walking with God and getting close to God is a lifelong activity.
Right.
And I can't teach a person in one day all the counsel of God and everything that God is, because I have a whole lifetime and you have a whole lifetime to do that.
Right.
But what I can reproduce in you is the simple skills in making that happen. And if you stay on the path of talking to God and listening to Him, walking with every day, all the great things of God come to you. And you know, the power and the direction and the gifts and everything the Bible talks about. So a lot of times in influence, you got two things going when you're trying to influence someone. There's the broad thing. I want you to be a better person, a kingdom person, a God-driven person.
Right.
That's a huge thing. But if I can just help you do a few skills, then those skills will take you on the road to that.
Right.
So when we talk about a walk with God, it's this big, huge thing. But a lot of times we like, when I meet with a person, I just make it simple.
Right.
Well, what's a walk with God? Well, it's just talking and listening.
Right.
I'll show you how to do that. It takes 5 minutes.
Right.
I can show you how to do this in 5 minutes and then go ahead and do it.
Right.
And then next week I talk to you about it. Well, I think that's a lot of times when we're coaching people, that's why coaching is about getting people to some form of action. What little thing can you do this next week that will help push the ball towards what you want?
Right.
So a lot of times influence is just a small little thing that you get someone to do rather than this huge thing that they have to now understand and buy into.
I like to just that little phrase, really reproducing is influence.
Yeah.
At the most prime level.
Right.
Well, let's keep moving on. So, being snobbish. Proverbs 14, verse 31, he who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker. But whoever is kind to the needy honors God. Proverbs 19, verse 17, he who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done.
Okay, for people, Henry, that are in countries where English is a second language, what does snobbish mean?
Snobbish is a preoccupation with like a higher class, a more wealthy class of society, or a preoccupation with a certain people group that they're part of, and if you're not part of my people group, it might be tribal, it might be racial.
Right.
There's ways in which, like, my team, for whatever reason, is better, but your team is poor in comparison to my team.
Right.
So it really has a lot of implications.
Looking down on people.
Others.
Like,
yes.
Because of whatever reason.
Yeah, in like in India, they have different class systems.
Right.
One class is here and the next class is there. But in Christ, we are all one in Christ.
Right. Or in sports, you got the people that are really good at something and then the ones who are beginners and the ones who are better look down on the ones who and don't let them play with them. And,
right. You know, and even just how the verses say, if you have more than someone else and you look down on someone who has less than you, and there's a lot of implications for that. I mean, entire philosophies are written. You know, Karl Marx wrote about communism because he felt like the poor were getting not a fair shake and the rich I mean, even had different terms, bourgeoisie, and all these other stuff. And again, that we are not communist here or anything. I'm just saying the topic has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. It becomes politicized. It becomes ingrained in churches. Even the Book of James: do not have favoritism. You don't have to the one person right. sit here and then the other person right. sit there. Yes. So that hurts our influence. I remember one of our mentors who helped start Christian Leaders Institute, Rich DeVos. We maybe told this story before, but we would go to like the Skybox, of the Magic, the Orlando Magic basketball team, and here a billionaire is getting to know the elevator worker with deep care, right. finding out about and here's one of the most influential people I have ever known, Rich DeVos, and he takes, even though he himself is a very wealthy man, that he has deep concern for everyone, no matter who they are.
So how does, because in some ways, if I'm, let's say, the mentor, I'm the guy who wants to have influence over somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I am kind of higher than them, because I know stuff.
Right.
When does me trying to be your mentor turn into snobbishness? Or how do I, are there some certain things I can do to make it so that I don't look like I think I'm better than you? Because
right.
in this particular thing that I'm mentoring in you in, I am.
Yeah.
So how do I, if I'm helping someone learn a sport and they're new and I've been at it a long time, I am better than you.
Well,
how do I come off not snobbish as I'm trying to help you become better?
Well, and to me, it's like that diaconus where Jesus says, if you're going to be great, you have to have the attitude of the servant and really say, look, I truly am thinking of the best of you. So first of all, is how you really are in your heart, you're back to your walk with God, and how you really care about the other person. And I think if you don't care, it comes through.
Right.
If you think you're better than them, it comes through.
Right.
If you're impatient because, oh, my valuable time of being a mentor is being wasted by this person who's just not learning fast enough, I think right. that comes through.
Right. I think, I know like within the sport, where you're trying to help someone that doesn't know as much as you, they know that already. They know you're way better than they
right.
are. But if I, if I communicate to them that the game is not comparing you to me,
right.
the game is comparing to you right now and you an hour later
right.
when you've learned a few things.
Right.
And wow, have you seen how much you improved in this last
right.
hour?
Right.
You see how you went from you couldn't do this and now you can?
Right.
I see great potential in you. See, then
right.
it doesn't matter whether I'm five times as good as they are.
Right.
In fact, the fact that I'm really good and me complimenting you just
right.
encourage you all the more. So
yeah.
you may be at a different level than someone, but it's how you communicate them. If you communicate, if you're constantly saying, yeah, you're a long ways from being as good as I am,
right.
or in a couple of years maybe you'll be where you're discouraging them, you're
right.
you're making that distance all the time.
Yeah.
I'm way better than you, and you keep saying that. If you're way better than someone else, is it something you shouldn't have to keep saying it?
No. Well, and it goes back to being the deacon, being the servant, and I think people see it.
Yeah,
they know it. In fact, this is one of maybe the most intangible things that you can point to. It, you can say, there's Rich DeVos on the elevator, there's us teaching, there's us ministering. And I have seen, I remember one minister at a conference 20 years ago, somebody asked him, so how do you like ministry? And the person said, without even thinking, I'd like it except for all the people in my congregation.
That's right.
Okay. And
yeah,
and really, and that person left the ministry.
Yeah, it's funny when you say that. My great uncle, my grandma's brother. I never met him. He died the month I was born. But he was a PhD philosophy teacher at Calvin College. And
okay. Well, you come from a long line of very intellectual people, Steve.
Yeah. So my son is that now. But he wrote a few books.
Right.
And when my grandmother was older, because he never married, my grandmother got all his notes, his chapel notes. So I have
right.
a stack of all his chapel notes and some of the personal things, that like his diary.
Right.
And I remember one of the diary entries was when he was going to school, and he had a high view of himself and kind of a low view of students. He would say, another day at school, another day of mediocrity. That's how he thought of his students.
Right.
Mediocrity, rather than another day to help precious minds that want to learn reach their full potential. That would have been another way to say it.
But again, it's so intangible. People of influence, you know, they don't have to say that they're beautiful. They are beautiful.
Yes.
They don't have to say that. And yet, we're still talking about the principles of this. In a lot of ways, for me, it's the shell that points back to the walk with God. Who are you really?
Yeah.
And this is another example. A snobbish person does come off where they need more of the liberation of a walk with Jesus Christ and that seeing everybody as an image bearer. But that can't be faked.
Right.
Somehow it's all real.
Yeah.
Poor listening skills.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Poor listening skills. Proverbs 18, verse 13, he who answers before listening, in other words, there's the impatience we talked about earlier, that is his folly and his shame.
So I like those two words. One, it's just not a good way to go because it's going to hurt you. But it's also wrong. It's just not treating people right.
Right.
So poor listening skills. So how would you positively say that? If a person wants to have influence, what do they need to do?
Be inquisitive in their listening.
Okay.
Listening in
what
a
do you
way.
Mean by that, inquisitive?
I also did the People Smart class, and they have a large section about People Smart in ministry, about listening. And I felt, which helped me in that class, was you can go two ways. One is you can be like, I know what this person's going to say, and I already know what this person is going to say, and I've got to quickly respond and say something, or I don't want to listen anymore because I know what this person is going to say. I thought a technique that really made me take that next step in humility and love was to have my mind like listen for the surprise. Listen for the thing that is said that's unexpected.
Right.
And then pack that away as, you know, how I can serve and how I can help that person, as opposed to, I know what they're saying, I got to get in edgewise, I don't want to listen anymore, you know, those types of attitudes.
Right. Listening, you know, I think what he answers before listening is folly and his shame. It's folly to start talking to someone and giving solutions to things that you don't even know what they want.
That's right.
I mean, I always at church and people, I don't think they ever catch on. That when someone asks me a question, someone here at our conference the other day, he came to me and he had questions about the Didache.
Right.
Now, do you think the Didache was, and he had this long, involved question about the Didache, you know?
Right.
And so when he was done asking the question, I said, you know, that's a really good question. What do you think?
Right.
And he had a lot to say.
Yeah.
Then he had, I have one more question. And then he had some more complicated question that I know he had a lot of stuff behind. And I said, wow, that's a deep question. Well, what do you think? And
right.
I mean, he didn't catch on that. He had all this stuff he needed to say. And I could have started talking.
Right.
I don't know who this guy is. I don't know why he's asking this question. I don't know what nuance he's coming from.
Right.
And I could just start talking. He had a bunch of stuff he needed to say before I could say a thing.
Right.
And once he's talked and I've listened, and now he feels good about me because I've listened.
Right, yeah.
Now I even know what I can even say something about.
Right, and you learn a lot about the Didache.
I did.
I mean,
especially I think too, if you ask a few inquisitive questions.
Right.
Like, it is so rare to find someone that's interested in what you have to say.
Right.
Interested in your life. And so if you're that person that's taking an interest in somebody, it unlocks all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, one thing when I first got to know you, and you would take me to the grocery store, and you're trying to help me do evangelism, or how do you get new people to join your church? Oh, let's go to the grocery store. So we go to the grocery store, and you find somebody. What's that on your sweatshirt? I got a sweatshirt,
right.
Too.
Yeah.
You just start talking. And what I found amazing was how within 2 minutes, were into their marriage problems or some disaster, or the doctor just told them that they might have cancer or whatever, in 2 minutes, from 0 to 60 in 2 minutes. And then, we would unpack that later and talk about, well, why is that? And we talked about how really everyone wants to be naked before the Lord and before others, like Adam and Eve were. Yeah. But sin, we're covered up and we're hiding, and no one understands us and no one listens. And so just a little bit of listening.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you give them freedom to discover and admit and see where they're at. And now you can make an influence in their life.
You know, in some ways, this passage, he who answered before listening, that is his folly and his shame. And you bring up the Adam and Eve, that relationally naked, the shame. And really, shame is an aspect to this. It's letting them share and letting them be who they are even before God, and be interested that they are an image bearer of God, and you have that regard for them.
I think most people aren't what they could be, not because they lack some information, but because they lack the sense that they're okay, that people see their potential, or that they even have any potential. So it's really getting them to believe in themselves more than a bunch of skills or correcting things.
Right.
And so by just listening, you're validating their life and who they are, and that they're somebody, and that people care, and that there's something good there. There's some gold there.
Right. You know, on evangelism, I've done it both. I've just shared the gospel, and I've done the other way, where we just start talking, and but more importantly, we listen. We have a conversation, and I listen. And I'm telling you, it's way more powerful if you have the attitude of listening.
Right.
It's way more powerful. Next one. Defeated attitude when things go poorly. So Proverbs 18, verse 14, a man's spirit sustains him in sickness, but a crushed spirit, who can bear? That's a very interesting passage. Proverbs 31, verse 25, talking about the Proverbs 31 woman. She's clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. So why is sort of a gloomy person, or if something goes poorly, the naysayer, I knew this wasn't going to work.
Right.
We tried that before. It just doesn't work. Why is that so influence-killing?
Well, in some ways, you can lead with kind of a positive thing, or a lot of leaders try to lead by the victim mentality.
Okay.
Like, I'm trying to influence you to do stuff by playing the victim. I can't find anybody to help clean the church or paint the church. I'm out there all by myself. Now I can guilt people into doing this, but they don't feel good about doing it. It's not fun. I pushed them. I shoved them. I made them feel guilty. That's why they're there. It's hard to find someone who's like always down and looking at the negative, but someone who's positive. Hey, we get to change the world tomorrow by decorating our church. Can you help? Because one person, might have a view of God. It might make them feel at home. I don't know. There's a winning way why we want to do this.
Right.
And you get to be a part of it if you'd like.
Right.
I called you because I thought you'd be really good at this. Who, me?
Yeah.
Change the world. Yeah. We're going to paint to change the world. That's right. This is God's house, and how we treat God is our example to the world. And you get to do that tomorrow. That's positive. Or when negative things happen, and I went through a divorce, and we're talking about marriage, and all I do is talk about how horrible marriage is and bad. Now why would I come to you for influence?
Right.
All you're doing is telling me your defeat.
Right.
If you're telling me what you did, my wife walked out.
Right.
But I'll tell you, my church, being a part of a group and my support team and my friends, they came, and then you tell the stories about what happened in your life through that negative thing.
Right.
there's a positive guy. I want to hang around a guy like that. That guy knows how to go through hard things, and I can relate to him. I go right. through these things too.
Right. I'd rather be around someone who fails forward.
Yes.
Than is constantly failing backwards.
Right. Rather than someone who's always negative. I mean, nothing works out. You know, relationships never really work out.
Yeah.
You know.
You got to be so careful because there's, you know, dreams. Don't hope for too much. You know, it's really interesting, this concept of dealing with failure and this back to your walk with God. You know, as we walk with God, we realize that, you know, sinners like us access the grace that Christ has given, and that I'm being transformed. He who began a good work in me is carried to completion. So even my failures are all part of a story, a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And I want to be around people who share that story, and it's powerfully influential.
Right. I think, coming again to that, because I just, over the last whatever year or so, I've seen this so much, that when a leader leads by being a victim, like they're always talking about, you know, how
I barely have time to get this done by
it's so draining, and people respond to it. If you use the victim card, people will come around and help you.
Yeah.
If you're a pastor and you're using the victim card all the time, there's a whole bunch of people that will respond and help you. But you're defining the relationship. You're not the leader.
Wow.
You're the victim. They're the leaders. So there's a lot of pastors out there who are not leaders of their church. They're the victim. And everyone there is bailing them out all the time.
Or
trying
like,
to help them.
You know, my car is broke.
Yeah.
And then, I hope I can get
a
car.
I can't make it. You know, I'm not getting paid enough.
And
then when you try to take them up the hill to do something, they don't follow you because you're not the leader.
Right. Powerful stuff. Acting carelessly with your reputation. A good name is more desirable than great riches, it says in Proverbs 22, verse 1. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Why is a reputation so important in being influential?
Yeah, well, what is a reputation? And how would you define it?
Well, you know, good question. I did this course in sociology that somebody could take, and part of that course was what goes into a reputation.
Mm.
And a reputation is something that's a long-term. In other words, you don't get a reputation in one day.
Right.
You get a reputation over periods of time. And it's an impression that the community or someone thinks about you that they've observed or that others have observed. So in a sense, reputation is a form of sort of, it's a foundational influence. So if you're a person that has broken relationships, you're a person who is abusive, or we're going to talk one in the future about a criminal record, that's a hurt reputation. So there is something about our reputation that has to be cared about.
So you can't become an influencer just by a couple of techniques.
No.
Or by doing, a few sessions with somebody. The whole of your life, it sort of sets you up as an influencer or not.
Right.
Because if you have a poor reputation, why would I follow you?
Right.
So this has more to do with your whole life. And that's why, like, a walk with God is not so important. It's not like, you know, if, let's say I'm trying to help somebody become a better parent. Okay, but if I have a lousy walk with God and I'm trying to teach you how to be a better parent, why would they follow me?
Right.
You're not even doing the basics with God.
Right.
How do you know anything about parenting?
Right.
So it's all one thing after another. Or and I meet someone that's in the business world and I know that their family life is a disaster and they're telling, you know, giving principles on how you create a team in business.
Yeah.
And I'm like a little skeptical.
Right.
Because how come this didn't work in your own family?
Right.
You know, there's brokenness there. So, you know, the whole of who you are is your influence.
Right.
Ultimately.
Right.
So your reputation is just a good indication of what people think of you. Now, not just because your reputation, you know, a bunch of people think a lot of things of you, it might be they're getting a false view of you, and then you have some correcting to do. And that's where some coaching might be in order. How do you repair some of this reputation? Because you came off as brash or you came off as something and you didn't mean to. That's
right.
Really not who you are.
Right.
But there's some subtle things that you need to do that will help you have a better reputation.
Right.
Because right now people have the wrong idea about you. So it's not like your reputation is always accurate.
No. Well, and there's, and I think that I've observed, there's some people who are manipulative about their reputation, and they're so concerned about their reputation that it is phony baloney. But
right.
To most of the world, it looks really good.
Right.
And then others who right. haven't really paid attention to it, and really they're walking with God. They're really great people. Nothing's ever perfect in life.
Yeah.
But they're sincere people. But for whatever reason,
right.
people think of them poorly when yeah. they actually are great people.
Because of a couple of little things.
A couple of little things.
That
right.
they tend to do.
Yes.
You know.
That hurts them.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Very interesting. Being a get-even person, Proverbs 24, verse 29, do not say, I'll do to him as he has done to me. Well, that's very much that. I'll pay that man back for what he has done.
Right.
I have met get-even people, and they're very hard to be around.
Yeah.
It's almost like it seems so transparent. I don't know how much we have to talk about it.
Well, yeah. I think it's, you know, it's easy to fall into this and call it justice.
Oh, I see. I see.
Right? It's...
Right. It's in a marriage, you see that? That's right.
I'm going to... I don't think anyone says, I'm going to get even with you, Henry.
Okay.
Okay, you treat me poorly, and I don't say, you know, I'm going to get even with you. I'm going to be, for the good of you, Henry, treat you poorly.
Right.
You want to tell me the truth about you? Well, let me tell you the truth
about you. Yeah, right.
And, you know, you say you're saying this to fix me and help me. Fine. I will fix you, too. I'll help you. How do you feel about it? You know,
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's sometimes we do it to, you know, we think that's going to stop them.
Right.
Like, you know, you do this, I do this, and now
right.
you'll learn. How do you like it?
Right.
How do you like to be treated this way? All right, then stop treating me that way.
Yeah.
But
and then you get a little one-upsman.
Usually it doesn't work. Yeah. You don't walk away going, wow, I must have treated you poorly. I'm going to learn a lesson and not do that. No, that's how it happens. You feel unfair. This is unfair. This
right.
was poor. You know, and then you retaliate. So people keep doing that back and forth. Husbands and wives, this is a classic.
Yeah.
People, they keep you retaliate, you do this, I do that. You do this, I do that.
Right.
You ignore me and go and do your own thing. I ignore you and do your own thing. You yell at me, I yell at you. I mean, sometimes I think even this past week I had with my wife, she was telling me about something that I did wrong, or I think I was telling her something that what annoyed me, and she just turned around and found something very similar about me that annoyed her.
Right.
And it's like, well, which one do you want to talk about?
Right.
No, I was talking about this, and you didn't admit it, you didn't say anything about it, you just threw one at me, and now here we go back and forth. Well, who's going to influence anybody that way?
No.
It just becomes a tennis match or a sporting match, and we both want to score,
right?
And no one wants to really solve this problem.
At the church level, you can see that with, the it's a form of the be victim thinking again, isn't it?
And it's it appeals to
nature.
Our competitive
nature.
You do this, I want to get you back.
Right.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Phony flattering. Proverbs 27, verse 14. If a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Proverbs 29, verse 5. Whoever flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his feet.
Yeah. And the meaning there is not a safety net, a net that will ensnare you and catch you. In other words, it'll come back to you.
Right, his own feet.
Yeah.
Like you're the one that will be snared.
Yes.
Why do you think that is, Steve? I that's an interesting metaphor.
Yeah, it is. Well, you picked out the verse. Why did you pick it out?
Back to the life coach. Well, I picked it out because flattery is like, it's a form that can be coming off as encouragement.
Yes.
But when it's phony baloney,
right.
What it really does is that is it hurts you.
Right.
Because then, the person that you're like giving that flattery to doesn't trust that you care about them.
Right.
They think the flattery is a form of your manipulation.
Right.
What do you want out of it?
And then so in some ways, your flattery is the opposite.
Yes.
I'm not flattering you. I am trying to manipulate you. I'm trying to get something from you rather than give you something.
Yeah.
Whereas true encouragement is, I'm just giving this to you. Hey, good job with that speech the other night, you know?
Right.
Not good job with that speech because I want something from you.
Right.
Yeah.
There are some people who just struggle with this. I think at times in my life when I was learning how to be an encourager, sometimes my encouragement did go to flattery because I saw how much encouragement made a difference. So I wanted to be encouraging even to people who I couldn't say much encouraging about. So instead of listening to who they really were and finding that which I could encourage, I just had like my 10 things that I do when I don't want to be around someone who is like not teachable. So I like deflect them away by flattery. My goal on one level is this person's not teachable. I got so much to do. I can't, you know. Right. So then, you know, I fell, I think, as I look back in a circumspect and honest way, I fell into flattery more than really paying attention to who some of these people were. And again, this is 40 years of ministry, and the truth be told, I mean, I have always been a work in progress, even in those days, and it was frustrating.
Yeah. It's a fine line between flattery and encouragement.
Yes.
Because I struggle with giving encouragement. And therefore, I don't really struggle with giving flattery because those two kind of go together.
Right.
So for those of you that are encouraging, I guess it's when, am I encouraging you for your sake or am I encouraging you for my sake, for what
and again,
I want?
Back to a walk with God.
And so the flattery thing is when I'm doing it for me, not for you.
Right. Exactly. Caring too much about what others say about you. Ecclesiastes, by the way, this is a not Proverbs one, but I figure it was same, you know, stuff like these.
Yeah.
In this whole series, this could be the only not Proverbs slide.
Yeah.
But the Ecclesiastes verse was so good.
Yeah.
Do not pay attention to every word people say, or they may hear your servant cursing you, for you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others.
Right. Do not pay attention to every word people say.
I've noticed that people with diminishing influence, their self-esteem and everything is often going which way the wind blows.
Mm.
And if people are talking good on Facebook about them, they feel better. If it's not, or they'll almost over need compliments.
Right.
You know,
come off needy.
They come off needy, and they come off needy because they really want to be affirmed. Christ has not affirmed them, so then they're, you know, my fans. You know, so then someone's identity is found in their fans, and if fans are great about you, then you feel better. But in the end, that's fool's gold in influence.
Right. I think people. If I'm always setting my course, my vision, by what I think other people think of me, I don't really have the vision, right? I'm just, my vision is dependent on what everyone around me is thinking and saying.
Right.
So I don't have a strong vision. And why would anyone want to follow me? I have no vision.
Right.
I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
It's, you know, the person you want to follow is someone who holds on to a vision regardless of what other people are saying.
Right.
I don't care what people are saying. This is the direction I think we should go.
Right.
If you're just listening to what everyone else has to say, then why am I following? A leader has, you know, we're going this way. I'm confident about going this. I can give you 20 reasons why we should go this way.
Right.
I can tell you the benefits of why it would be good for you to go this way. Now let's go this way. But if you're like, well, I don't know, what does everyone think about which way we're going to go? No, that's a good point. Everything's a good point. And one minute they're going this way. How can anyone follow that?
Well, and what starts happening is they say one thing to one group. They say another thing to another group.
Whatever their itching ears want to hear.
Right. Right. Well, and I think to be a disruptive leader, too, where we're disrupting our world for Christ, it means to hold to that relationship and that voice of God in your heart. Now, again, when you say that, I don't be a cult leader, don't go outside, you know. But there is that line where you say, why am I here? What is my purpose? It's to please Christ, not men.
I think of the tiller in Lifeboat number 9, or I forget which number it was.
The Titanic
story. The ship has gone down, 1,500 people in the water crying for help, and all these lifeboats were half full, and one of them... the guy holding the tiller said, all right, we go back and we rescue people out of the water. And then everyone in the boat said, no, we can't do that. If we go back, they'll swamp the boat and then we'll all die.
Right.
So then this guy, who's the light, he's the designated leader. He stood up and he said, all right, I want everyone to remember, if we get rescued, I want everyone to remember that I wanted to go back.
Right.
All right. Now, what he should have said, so in other words, he was worried about what they would say, what they would do.
Right.
He should have stood up and said, I'm the designated leader. This is a lifeboat, and we're going back. And if you don't like it, you can get out.
Right.
Because this is what we do.
Right.
See, people will follow that. They're not going to follow, you know, let's all vote and decide which way we're going to go. I'm not following a guy like that.
No.
He doesn't know where he's going, so why should I follow him?
Right.
How can he have influence? He doesn't even know what to do with his own life.
Right. Good. Well, a lot here. When you signed up for this class, you thought, but we're not even halfway done. With the influencing, wrecking habits, these habits take away, and the Bible reveals how we as Christians, followers of Christ, can do these things. So we're going to continue on with more in our next session.
All right.